Hello, and welcome to Mornings with Joel, Commercial Real Estate Podcast, where we focus on rising stars and established players in commercial real estate and talk to them about how they are building legacies in today's marketplace. Three other areas I wanted to cover real quick as we look at this. Succession planning. You know, a lot of companies kind of stall after the founder and the CEO kind of, you know, go their way. And I know you're still making that transition. You know, I've had the conversation with Jerome over there at H.J. Russell about how they've been able to do it. How have you been able to do it? How, you know, what's the methodology, the mindset in order to be able to pull off something like that, to keep the company going really as a legacy for yourself and not let it die out when you leave?
Well, okay, we'll get spiritual again. So, I'm not a preacher, but I'm just going to tell you. You asked the question, I'll tell you how it happened.
Please.
So, a lot of people, you know, Leontay. So, Leontay Benton was a guy who came to me, a little bit over 16 years ago now. Mm-hmm. This happened to me all the time because I was the black guy in the business.
Right.
And so, all the white firms, if a black person interviewed with them, they would ask them in interview, whether it was CBRE, Jones Lang LaSalle, Cushman, have you met with Dallas Smith yet? They would ask them that.
Really?
And so these people would call me, and it used to irritate me, Joel. But I didn't know what God was doing. Okay, what God was doing was creating this thing called T. Dallas Smith and Company. And we hadn't talked about me in my prior years, but before I realized what I was really called to do,
mm-hmm.
I was very transactional. That's why I speak so much about that is not the way to be. I was that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I was extremely transactional. And so I ended up meeting, people would come to me, want to get into the business. And I would ask them, everybody the same question. Do you have your real estate license? Most people would say no. I said, get your license and come back and we'll talk. So, you know, Leontay came to me. I did him the same way I did everybody else.
Yeah.
Get your license and we'll talk. And so I thought I'd gotten rid of him because that's how, I know I said that to 50 people and nobody ever came back.
Mm-hmm.
This is over Christmas holiday. Leontay comes back in 3 weeks. Mr. Smith, I got my license. So he did it online, you know, didn't sleep. I mean, just cranked it out. I was like, oh, hell. So in my head, what I need to do to get rid of this kid, because this is not what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And so for 2 weeks, I had him doing the most ridiculous thing, you know, walking my dog, washing my car, getting my sandwiches, getting my coffee, all types of stuff, with the hope that he would just leave. But he never did.
Wow.
And one day, this was the day I'm going to get rid of. I'm getting rid of him on this day. So I said, Leontay, yes, sir. How many square feet in an acre? I don't know. I looked at my watch. Okay. You better figure it out. So he come back. 43,560 square feet, sir. I was like, yeah, give me some coffee. So right around that time, a UPS driver come and was delivering a case of water.
Uh-huh.
As he delivered the ward, I said, Leontay, can you put the ward up for me? He said, yes, sir. Everything was always yes, sir. Very, you know, just a servant's heart. And he's putting the ward up. I have this epiphany. It's like God said, Dallas, that was you when you were trying to get in the real estate business.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nobody who looked like you that could help you.
Yeah.
You can help this kid and like anybody could ever help you. And it was literally, Joel, at that moment, at that time, when I realized God called me to do. Why I had gone through all this stuff. Why I was here to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably 2 weeks into that, God says, train him up as a son. Give him the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
This will be the one who will run your company when you are 60. This is 16 years ago.
Wow.
So when I turned 60 on August 23rd, I knew, and we, you know, Leontay and I have shared everything I'm telling you, I've shared with him. Everybody who comes on board with us, I tell them this story.
Okay.
I tell them next to this story. We were 4 years into the business when Dexter came on board.
Okay.
I told Dexter the story. And my whole belief was if it's real, then the people who I'm talking to will just, they'll understand it. They'll believe it. We'll move in that direction. So when August 20th of this year came around, we had a, what I call the baton transaction, you know, transfer. We had our closest family members there. We had it at the gathering spot. We had a real big event. I shared this story with everybody. On that day, we made Leontay president of the company. For me, it was about honoring what God said to do, number one, and for me to continue to kind of move into this space of a couple of things. One, I'm I'm in my mascot phase of my career. What I mean by that, people associate me with the brand, with the firm. Mm-hmm. That's why we got new opportunities like this with these fine people on this call, on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm playing my role as the mascot. What does the mascot do? The mascot should, you know, when you go to any game, the mascots are doing push-ups on the side. They're shooting T-shirts into the crowd. They're doing everything they can to bring business back to the mothership.
Right.
To make the team win. So ultimately, I'm in that role, and I'm creating a new company called TDS Investments, where we are going to be investing into office, industrial, and land. And I'm doing that with guys who, developers who've been doing that their whole life. Egbert Perry, everybody knows Egbert Perry. Alan Morris is another one. He did Star Metals. And then Young Woo is a big developer out of New York. He's the landlord for Google in New York. They rent 1.2 million square feet from Young Woo. His name is Young Woo. That's his whole name. His first name is Young, last name Woo, but I always say Young Woo. He asked me one time, Dallas, why do you always say my whole name? I was like, I'm talking about a rapper. But Young you'll be hearing more about what's coming, but the whole adage is, never bet on the horse, bet on the jockey.
Yeah.
So I'm betting on, three really good jockeys, Egbert, Alan Morris, and Young Woo, along with this young fella right here. So that's kind of what's coming. But to answer your question, I'm simply doing what God told me to do.
Yeah. No, that's I didn't expect to get that story, but that's that's excellent, man. That's excellent because, knowing the company and like I said, I've known Dex for quite some time. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, who's this young guy that is going to be running the company? But I think I know there's a big lesson there to be learned.
Yeah.
The humility that he had in order to, because he could have said, like you said, you expected him to leave, right?
Yeah,
I ain't picking up your sandwich.
I didn't want him to leave.
Right. Yeah. So you're trying to push him away, and yet, and still, he showed that he really wanted it in his core, And he's obviously going to really represent the brand well because he loves it.
He'll take this firm and make us a $1 billion company.
Yeah,
he is. He's a young man, but he's an old spirit. I mean, like I always say, the boy been here before. But, all the lessons, first thing I had him do, I introduced him to Mr. Tiff, the guy who brought me into real estate business. And Mr. Tiff made a comment to him in terms of how he tracks his expenses in this first meeting. Mm-hmm. Leontay's been doing it that way since he met.
Wow.
So, he takes the stuff and takes it to a whole nother level. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Mr. Russell. And what I said to Dex, I said, dude, we don't need another dude our age, another woman our age running their firm. Mm-hmm. We got to get some young blood, some young legs in here who can run faster. But they have the benefit of having the resources that are me and Dexter to help the engine move faster. Kind of what I was talking about with LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. You know how to knock on doors and know how to do LinkedIn. You're a dangerous combination.
Yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of the young folks can only do one thing or the other. A lot of the old folks can only do one thing or the other. But the idea is to continue to stay green enough to grow, to get better and better at what you do every day. As long as I've been doing what I'm doing, I'm still trying to get better at what I'm doing every day.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, that's powerful. And I definitely could see the thing growing. I was talking to Jair Lynch last week, who's a developer out of D.C., he was talking about how this next generation is really going to just take things to another level, and we talk about the things we may have accomplished, but, the future is there and it's exciting to be part of educating and helping to move those forward, and obviously I appreciate you being here because that's the story we're trying to get out, stand on our shoulders and go to the next level.
You're going to go fast. I'll give you a perfect example now. Mm-hmm. It just got an AT&T as a client. And we were flying to the head of real estate for AT&T at the time was a guy named Court Bishop.
Okay.
Court was based in San Francisco. So it's me, Dexter, and Leontay. We're going out there to have dinner with him just to connect. Mm-hmm. And I look at Leontay. I say, man, you know how many years it's taken me to have this dinner? I said, it's taking me 28 years to have this dinner. I said, it's only taking you 5.
Wow.
That's the benefit of what you're describing about standing on the other person's shoulders.
Yeah.
And the other folks coming in, now where he's training should do it faster than him.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, there's people who've been here only a year and they're working on corporate teams.
Yeah.
And that's what will happen if we support one another.
Mm-hmm.
Understand, we're much stronger together than we are out here running solo. And the other thing is, if you're out here running solo, you'll never be able to compete with me. Ever. Yeah. Ever, ever, ever. On your best day, you won't be able. Because you may be very, very good at what you do.
Yeah.
But the real question, the real test is, can you put a squad together?
Mm-hmm.
Can you put a team together who can execute?
Yeah.
And that should be the goal for all of us, because this is not a long range sport. This is not a lone wolf sport. You need a team. If you're going to go after these corporations, you're going to go after these big deals, you're not going to be able to do it as a one-off.
Yeah.
You're going to have to be able to show them that you have a capacity, that you put a team together, that you can execute at the highest level.
Yeah. And have the resources to get it done. You're absolutely right. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very, very good point. You mentioned about growth also. We kind of started down that path. I noticed, you know, I was just unaware of how vast you guys have grown. You know, I'm still viewing you as a local Atlanta company, but I understand you have branches and offices and are doing business in other states as well. So, you know, how has that all come to fruition?
Yeah, so we've shifted that model a little bit. We have a presence in Los Angeles, and we have an arrangement in Texas, in Dallas specifically, and in New Jersey. But, you know, that's the other thing about being in Atlanta. In Atlanta, you can go to Hartsfield and you can cover 80% of the United States in 2 hours.
Yeah.
So we self-serve a lot of our work. We'll get on the plane. That's why I've got so many licenses. I'll get on the plane and work. Because what I realized early on, these bigger shops, this is what they're doing. Let's say, Joe, you work for Big Shop Number One, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But you're based in Atlanta, and you need to do a deal in Arkansas. But you're not licensed in Arkansas. So what you do is you pick up the phone internally, and you call. You may ask somebody in your office, who should I call
in Arkansas.
My office and talk to in Arkansas?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll tell you, call, you know, Jim Clark. Okay, so you call Jim Clark. Jim, here's this deal. I got a client I've been working with for years, and we've got a deal in Arkansas. I want you to help run point for me on this. And Jim goes, okay. So Jim's running, but here's the problem. The client hired you. You know the quality work that you do. Jim's work may not be the quality that you have. And as a result, you get tarnished because
yeah.
The client looked at you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you brought Jim in, and Jim screwed the thing up. So, dude, that's why I'm going to Arkansas. I'm going to get licensed in Arkansas if I'm not.
Yeah.
Or even if I tie in with Jim, I let Jim know, Jim, we're going to work together, but I'm doing everything as it relates to the correspondence with the client. Mm-hmm. You won't interface with the client. I may use you as my boots on the ground. Yeah. I know a lot of military people don't like that term, so I apologize if I said that I offend anybody by using that, but you're going to help me if mm-hmm. I need you to go open a space and that kind of stuff. But as it relates to negotiating and everything else on behalf of that client, we're going to do that. That way you got a cleaner quality of process. So the client knows it's like, you know, if you order McDonald's from China or in Arkansas, it's going to be the same hamburger.
Yeah.
This system is that tight that it's the same hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want to be able to get. No, regardless of where our clients go, they're getting the same good work, good product. And you've got to be able to execute that. So if that helps with somebody in Chicago or somebody we've worked with before that we really like, and we've got some folks out there that we really like, that we've been doing some work with for years now,
mm-hmm.
that I don't have to worry about, you know, if I put the call in, I know his quality going to be just as good as ours, if not a little bit better. And I'd much rather give you that than any subpar work.
Yeah, yeah. And that's all about building the brand, you know, which I think you've done an exceptional job of, which is kind of why we even tagged this podcast as brand building, because even though there's so much more to what Dallas Smith Company is, the brand has taken a whole nother level where people recognize it, they understand it, they respect it. And, you know, just congrats to you for doing it. I think that's been exceptional. So,
well, man, I tell you all the time, I give glory to God, brother. I'm telling you, what I started creating was very simply what he told me to do.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, all I'm doing is what God told me to do.
Well, that's the right thing.
Some really good people. Herman Russell was mentor number one. Mm-hmm. You know, so I've had some great mentors, but Herman was that dude.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's all God, man, putting these things together. And I don't take credit for it. I'm going to execute what he told me to do. And I'll be clear to let people know that's all I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us are we're out here just trying to be transactional, just trying to make money, not really understanding what God's really calling us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so my whole thing is really learn to hear from God's voice, learn to hear God's voice as it relates to you, what it is that you are supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people are trying to grow in fields they shouldn't even be in.
Yeah. And it shows up over time, does it not?
Oh, man. It shows up. And I'm like, dude, you might be really good at something else, but this ain't it.
This ain't it.
And then, you know, but and then again, that's not to discourage anybody. It's just to be real clear on what you are supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
You know, and if this is what you're supposed to be doing, knock it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know, I've got a book coming out, Joe. I'll be remiss if I didn't say anything.
Okay.
March 4th is the actual drop date. The name of the book is In the Black. And it's really the whole story about how I got started from beginning to end, because I've gotten that question a lot of times. And it's really the blueprint for people to get the book and to see what I went through, things I've had to deal with. And the reality is very simple for me. The message I want from the book is that if this little kid who grew up off of Simpson Row in Atlanta, Georgia, who couldn't even pronounce the word orange, I used to call it orange, can operate in the highest level of this industry, you can too.
Yeah.
And that's why, and it's called In the Black for a double entendre, right? Mm-hmm. In the Black is only one of the rare places in the dictionary where black is actually a positive. Every company after financial period, fiscal period wants to be in the black, in the positive.
Right.
And I'm also a contention is that companies that are majority firms really want to be profitable, they better be in the black too. What I mean by that, they better have diverse teams, because when you have diverse teams, you're getting diverse opinions.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at a problem to solve. If I'm only looking at the problem through your lens and I don't take into account, you know, everybody else is on this call, we may never really get to the real answer. And that's why that's how we've been kicking a lot of guys in the butt.
Yeah.
Because they're myopic and they only see one thing one way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, and after, you know, years and years of clients getting the same thing, the world is going in a whole different direction, man.
Yeah.
You have to be able to tap on those resources.
Right. No, that's valid. That's certainly a valid point. You know, you're either going to be selling to the demographic that's just like you because they think like you and act like you. But if you're going to grow your business and be able to really compete out here in the marketplace, you got to get diversity. There's no other way around it. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm glad to see a lot of boards are changing in that perspective as well, which opens up the opportunity for a lot of minorities as well. You know, we're starting to see more and more minorities that are sitting on boards because now they have those years of experience and everything else. It's a good thing, you know, from that standpoint. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I did want to circle back. I don't know what happened with the recording at the beginning, but, you know, the way how you really got started with H.J. Russell and everything else. But I guess we don't have to go into too much of it because you got your book coming out, you know.
You're going to get the full detail.
Get the full detail. But that was an incredible story how, you know, you started there and how that company is basically peeled off. You know, we could say at least three major legends. There's obviously other folks in the city as well that have done well, but yourself, Egbert, and who was the other name you mentioned?
Noah Khalil, who, you know, just really passed this year. He died this year.
Yeah.
His company, Columbia, is still around, still making things happen, man. And I'm telling you, we all had a front row seat to see the master do his work, Herman Russell, man. And so I'm not surprised because we saw him operate the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you talk about Mercedes-Benz Stadium and Equitable Building, Colony Square, Herman was a part of all these deals.
Yeah,
man.
Airport.
I mean, billions of days.
This goes on and on.
Yeah, this goes on and on.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So. No, that's a valid point. I want to ask you also just a little bit about office, you know, because obviously that's a market that has changed dramatically because of COVID. And I know also it's the spot that you play in mostly.
Yeah.
So how have you guys adapted to this change where, you know, people may not be coming back to work? Maybe companies are trying to downsize and reduce their leases and things of that sort. What challenges have you faced there, and how are you getting through that?
Well, I think it's all relative, right? So I think the one thing we got to remember is that people's memories are very short, very short. So I'm still bullish. I'm still bullish about office, period, because I believe people's memories are short.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about 9/11, when 9/11 happened, nobody was going to go back into an office space. Particularly, nobody was going to go back into a high rise.
Yeah, definitely in New York City, they weren't.
Particularly in New York City.
Yeah.
And they're building Chase Bank got a new headquarters coming up, dude. It's going to be one of the most massive things. You may be able to see it from Atlanta.
Grand Central, right? Grand Central.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So our memories are very short. I think we have to remember that our memories are short. And even where there is an overbuild, there is a shortage of housing. And so you're going to start seeing some divergence of from office buildings to apartments or condos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's going to have to be highly subsidized, which we're seeing that as well. They've decided they're cleaning my window outside. So that's what you hear now. I apologize.
All right, no problem.
This is the day they decide to clean the window. But Chicago has a pilot program out right now where the city and county states putting money towards these conversions.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to start seeing more of that. So either way, the office is going to be reutilized or occupied. Because anybody who went through COVID and stayed at home with the family, you know, I got a wife and a daughter. And my wife, I don't know about y'all's wife, but if I was at home, as long as I'm at home, means I can go do something. Okay?
That's right.
And so it's like, well, you think you can do this at 2 o'clock? You go, you know. So I'm like, I'm working. I know, but the fact that I'm at home didn't signal that, right? So I couldn't wait to get the hell out so I can get back to the office so I can actually get some work done.
Yeah,
my wife don't see this, but I hear that message often, right? So there, it may not be gangbang like it was before. I mean, gangbusters like it was before, but it may be a shorter. But it's not going anywhere. Some things, I mean, like lawyers. Lawyers will not be able to just, you know, you're not going to go see your lawyer at their house. That's just, you're not going to do that. You know, and because I come to your house and I see what you're spending your expense on and you want 40% of my fee after my car accident.
Yeah, it ain't going to happen.
I'm gonna give you maybe 10%, man, because you know, all you're doing is you live in this 3-bedroom house. No, dude, you ain't getting that. They need that marble. They need to do what they do. But
yeah,
it will evolve, but it won't change.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting you mentioned that because last week I was on a tour at the Hudson Yards complex in Manhattan. You know, related. And, you know, these guys are telling me how these buildings are 100% leased. Or, you know, I think the least leased one was about 85%. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You know?
And Hudson Yards is only 5 years old, bro.
Yeah.
So this is all new, relatively in New York. That's a new community.
Right.
Actually reminds me a lot of Atlanta, Hudson Yards. But that's my point. Don't get stuck on the sound bites.
Yeah.
Look at the uses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we know warehouse ain't going nowhere because we too busy buying stuff online.
Online, yep.
And that stuff is being housed somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to think the people who are producing this stuff, designing the packages, who are putting us, they're in an office somewhere. They're not in the warehouse. They're in an office somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about collaboration with teammates, it's only so much you can do online.
Yeah.
The other 12 meetings that I have by just walking in the hallway that are not on my agenda would never happen if I didn't come into the office. The last thing I'll say about that, it's hard to preserve culture.
Yeah.
Just doesn't.
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, who are you? If you're going to find, I see James there. If you're going to, if he's going to just define his culture and I'm working with him. But the only time I see him is on Zoom or we use Microsoft, just so you know, Microsoft Teams.
Of course you do.
We use Microsoft Teams, but if we're trying to build at something, and that's the only time I see you, but then we're competing with a firm who all their people are in the same office, we're going to get our asses handed to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just telling you, the team that's got the tightest culture going to win. The team that's fragmented, who's just trying to, well, you will not be able to compete against us for damn sure. Because when you come in and make a presentation, make a pitch, and your team's meeting for the first time, it's first time James actually sees me in person, first time he sees Shy in person. The chemistry won't be there when you make your presentation.
It'll show through.
It'll show through.
Yeah.
And so your presentation will look less than the team that's together.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a very good argument, man. I appreciate you bringing that out. So, you know, so let's do this. We've gone a little long. I wanted to do that, though, because I hate that we possibly missed the first part of that. But let's open it up to a Q&A. Do you have a few more minutes to hang in there with us?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. And I apologize about that, because I actually started recording before you even came on the line. And I'm not sure exactly what happened there. But as always, guys, you know, you could either raise your digital hand or put your questions in the chat. And, you know, we'll go from there. So let's see. Latoya, she had to bounce. Uriah, who's always here, certainly appreciate him being here. Let's see. He says, where can I call to get a signed copy of the book? So,
well, stay tuned. There will be a website, all that stuff put together. The fortunate thing, smarter people than me putting all that together.
Yeah.
All I had to do is provide the content. So,
yeah.
But it'll be coming. More and more will be coming. You'll hear more about it. But I really, the book is dedicated to everybody who were told they'd never make it, that they were too black, too young, too something.
Mm-hmm.
That's what dedicated to, that if I could do this, definitely you can too.
Yeah. Let me ask this. How long do you think it's, and this is a completely arbitrary question, but we're seeing the advancement of minorities in commercial real estate. The percentages are still microscopic. How long do you think it's going to take before we really start seeing the fact that if we make up 16% of the population or 30-something percent of the population in Atlanta, we'll start seeing numbers like that in commercial real estate? It's probably going to be generationally before that happens, you think, or do you have a different opinion on
that? I think in Leontes, maybe by the time Leontes my age, we'll see more. He's 38, I'm 60. So what's that, 22 years?
22 years, yeah.
And the reason I say that, when I got into the business 40 years ago, we made up 1% of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
We're at about 3% now. So we've moved 2 points in 40 years.
Wow. That should accelerate, though, I would think. Yeah.
So I see it exponentially because a couple things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have more black and brown people as a majority in the country than as no longer a minority, but the majority. Which means you got more, your client base of any company is going to be more of a majority company. You want to represent the communities that you're trying to sell to. You mm-hmm. made that point earlier. And so you're going to see more of that happen. So as that happens, the heads of real estate are going to be looking more diverse. You're going to have more women. So you better have more women, more diversity. Because if they have five white guys go in and pitch Michael Ford, he's like this. And I've heard this so many other times. Because, I mean, just imagine there's a cartoon where it's a board of maybe 20 white men, and they're interviewing a black woman. And the question the interviewer asks, what can you possibly bring to us?
Yeah. You think?
And the image is like, dude, like you got 15 of the exact same people. You need something to be able to see things just a little different. And out of that, you can get solutions. Out of that, you can win business and help the client.
Yeah. 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 No, there's that's a funny cartoon, because that certainly makes the point.
Yeah.
Tamika, let's see here. Was there ever a situation where you knew someone that did not want to do business with you because of your race as a new broker? How did you handle it? So that sounds like something for the book as well, but.
Yeah, I actually talked about that in the book. Absolutely. Okay. I have, you know, I would thank God for my mother. I was raised by a mother and a father who taught me to find out for myself. You know, there's a scripture that says, you know, study to show yourself approved. Mm-hmm. That you just don't take the word from somebody else. So that's been me. That's been my whole life. So Mr. Tiff, the guy who brought me in the real estate business, his father was the Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan in Tifton, Georgia.
Wow.
Really? So why do I bring that up? I bring that up for this reason. Mm-hmm. A lot of us would not have pursued none of this if you knew that fact. For me, that was their issue, not mine.
Yeah.
My issue was, I need to get to know you for myself. I rule people in or out based on one thing. If you're an asshole, I ain't got nothing to do with it. And I've learned that assholes come in every shape, size, color, creed. And if you're not an asshole, I can deal with you.
Mm-hmm.
And if I deal with you over time, guess what may happen? You may actually build a relationship with this person. You build a relationship with this person, they see you differently. They see you differently, things change. I mean, Mr. Tiff had hired any black people doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
He had no idea I was black when I came there, first of all. I tell this story in the book. My first name is Tanalo. The T in my name is Tanalo. My full name is Tanalo Smith. When I had an interview with Mr. Tiff coming up, I knew Tanalo Smith on the resume wasn't going to get past file 13.
Yeah.
So I had to create a persona. And one of the personas when I did my research in terms of wealthy people, T. Boone Pickens was one of the people that names was.
Okay.
So I had a T and I had Smith, which is pretty generic. So I needed something in the middle. In 1982, the hottest TV show around was Dallas.
Okay.
So I put T, Dallas, Smith together on the resume, whitewashed my resume, gave it to my white buddy who gave it to Mr. Tiff. So Mr. Tiff's assumption was that I was white. And when we had the phone call, he assumed I was white because I put on my Johnny Carson voice. I can't do Johnny Carson now, but in 19, when I was 19, I could kill Johnny Carson. And so that's what I did.
Yeah.
So by the time he met me, it was like, oh.
One of us. Yeah.
This is the secretary. Oh, yeah. Said, Dallas is here, Mr. Tiff, but he's black. Now, Mr. Tiff to this day, you know, God rest his soul, never knew that I knew the story. She went in and told him I was black, that I was here black. And Mr. Tiff said, well, this would be the shortest interview in the history of mankind. But since he's here, let him come on back. And I go back. And we end up talking for 2 hours, man.
Oh, man.
And to your point, it's about connecting. And how we connected, he had a picture of Ronald Reagan on his desk.
Uh-huh.
A black and white picture of Ronald Reagan that said, to my dear friend Tommy from Money. And before we sat down, I said, oh, you're a Reagan fan? He said, yes, I am. I said, oh, so am I. He's like, what? So I could deer in headlights.
Yeah.
So the first time I could vote was in 1980. If you remember, Jimmy Carter was having president.
Mm-hmm.
He ran against Reagan. And it wasn't about Democrat or Republican for me. It was, a lot of folks are young on this call, they won't know this, but Jimmy Carter, a good man, was governor of the state. But when Jimmy Carter was president, interest rates were 17-18%. There was gas lines. You couldn't go to get gas every day. Based on your last name, it was the days when you could go get gas.
Yep.
And so in my head, at 19, I'm going, God, you know, dude, if this remains, I'm going to be broke as hell. I'll never be able to afford a house. So for me, it wasn't about Democrat or Republican. For me, it was about the other guy. Let's give the other guy a chance. And when the other guy came in, dude, I was kicking butt. The real estate industry was out the roof. And so Tiff and I talked about Reagan for an hour. Then he had a tennis racket. I had the exact same racket. It was my Pro-Kinex, which was called the Black Ace. It was the first graphite racket that came out.
Okay.
So we ended up talking for 2 hours, man. And when I left, he said to Susan, I'm going to do something I thought I'd never do. I'm going to hire that young man. And Mr. Tiff brought me into real estate business. His life changed. My life changed as a result of us knowing each other. And so I'm a big believer that I don't care what their opinion may be of me, but they hadn't met me yet.
Yeah.
People need to meet you first. I mean, because I think one of the biggest disadvantages that we have is that we get lumped into a pot because I'm black, you're black, and we're all just the same. Well, back to my point, we all know assholes, black, white, purple, green, right? You're going to get to know me. Then you make a decision of whether or not Dallas is an asshole or not, whether you like Dallas or not, based on me.
Yeah.
Now, again, your issues from a racial standpoint is your issues. They're not mine. And I'm not going to make your issues my issues.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's strong. That's strong. So I hope that answers your question.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go so long.
Oh, it's all good. It's all good. Oh, man. All right, Uriah, what key bits of wisdom could you share on building a strong brand as a newer member in the CRE community? That's a very good question.
Yeah. Start with your name, man. Understand your name. Understand your name is your brand. I mean, what I mean by that, not, you know, the good news is Uriah doesn't have to change his name in 2022.
Yeah. Uriah Houston Robinson.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's about what I mean about being you are the brand. So when I meet Joel Miller, I should be meeting Joel Miller. I shouldn't be meeting the entire diaspora of black folk.
Mm-hmm.
If you just represent Joel, you're part of that diaspora. You meet Dallas, I'm part of that diaspora. You meet James, I'm part of that. But when I meet you, I need to meet you. I don't need to meet a representative. I need to meet you, because then you give me the opportunity to decide whether or not I like you or I don't like you.
Mm-hmm.
And if I like you, I will build a relationship on that. If I don't like you, I'm moving on.
Yeah.
And everybody else, they may not vocalize it the way I just did.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how we make our decisions. We simply, there's people you met that you just like.
Yeah.
Like Leontay was that guy. I can't dislike the guy. And that's called favor. When God gives you favor like that,
mm-hmm.
you'll be very surprised at people who will like you, who may not like other black people, but love James. I love Joel. And as a result of liking you, then become have the attitude to be able to receive other black folks. Like, I try to tell people, I cannot demand you like me. I can't. And oftentimes we, as black folks, come with a demand for you to like me. You're going to respect me, but I do.
Yeah.
Everybody who's married, go home and demand something from your wife. Demand it. And then let me know how that works.
Yeah.
Okay. The moral of the story is you cannot demand anything from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You have to build relationships with people. Based on that relationship is whether or not you're going to build anything with that person, period.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that makes the point. Okay. Uriah said, thank you.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. What does it say? Yes, it does. Can we still find you at Busy Bee doing deals?
Absolutely. I still go to Busy Bees. I'm not sure who said that, but they know my story about, I was real big. I was taking, I see Bruce Kellogg on this. Bruce is a great guy.
Yep.
I can only see a handful of people, so I'm not sure who else is on here. But what I would tell people, I just got this epiphany one day. You know, I used to take clients to like Chops and Bones and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it hit me. I'm like, dude, all the white dudes taking them to Bones and Chops and everything. I mean, what the hell? Me taking them to Bones and Chops is no different.
Right.
So I said this one day, my business partner, he knew what I was going to do. But Cedric Matheny, who was new, he didn't know I was going to do this. We were with a guy, he's a real estate guy. He's not there anymore at Delta Airlines. So mind you, he met with four black people, you know, including me, four black folks in my firm and him, white guy. And then when we're walking out, I said, let me ask you a question. You like fried chicken? And he's because it's like a setup. He don't know if it's a trick question or what. Like I feel like I'm not, as a white dude, I'm not supposed to be saying.
Right, right. How do I answer this question?
And so he goes, I like fried chicken. I said, man, we're gonna take you to Busy Bees. Busy Bees had just been named the number one fried chicken place in Georgia. And so we took him to Busy Bees. Now, what's my point in telling the story?
Mm-hmm.
He got a chance to see a little bit of our culture at this restaurant, which he never would have gotten at Bones.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And how often is it also an opportunity for me to put him in a place where he is the only white dude in the room?
Mm-hmm.
where I typically have been the only black dude in my rooms for a very long time.
Sure.
And I want people to know what that feels like. What that feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And how you can help support that or not.
Yeah.
And most of the soul food places, y'all know, arms are open wide to receive anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And if you come, you know, they're going to show you love. Baby, what you want? Baby, yeah, get you. That's our culture. That's who we are, right? Yeah. And so why shouldn't we expose our culture to our to people who don't look like us?
Yeah.
So I've been doing that, man. Dude.
Yeah. Get them to learn something, you know?
Yeah.
But they think they know, but they don't know.
And guess what? They're not going to Busy Bees without calling you.
Yeah, that's right.
So they're not going to go to Busy Bees without calling you. And when they go home to tell their wife, I had the best fried chicken today, babe. I was on MLK. And she's like, oh my God, what are you doing over there? Dallas took us. They cannot tell that story without talking about me.
That's right. That's right. Good strategy, man.
You got to find ways to connect.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good strategy. Very, very good strategy. One last thing I just want to end on, you know, because we are going to wrap up in a minute, is about relationships. I want to just kind of go back to that point. You mentioned about Cornette. You said about 3,000 people, about, I think how you broke it down, 18 were black. Of that 18, six of them were from your company, you know.
Yes.
So, but the point of, you know, you wanted to meet the head of Microsoft for real estate. You know, it wasn't about, hey, I got a deal. Let me pitch you. You know, it was more about the genuineness of it. So as we wrap up, kind of speak to that again for me, just the importance of building relationships and the value of like a Cornette and some of these other organizations and really growing your career from that standpoint.
Yeah. So let me be clear, too. When we first went to Cornette, it was just four of us. As I mentioned to you, it's an expensive conference to go to.
Sure.
You got to pay for, you know, transportation, the hotel, and then the fees you pay just to go to the thing. And then, you know, you got to be approved to go. All this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I want to answer the question, but I'm going to answer it a little bit different way. So my business partner back in the day, a lawyer, a good friend of mine, Denzel Washington, was a client of his. So I had an opportunity to hang out with Denzel on multiple occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And what everybody wanted to pitch to Denzel, everybody wanted to autograph, blah, blah, blah. And what I realized, I didn't want to be that dude. So I never asked Denzel for an autograph. I never took a picture with Denzel because I wanted him to be, when he was around me, to feel like he could be a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Similarly with Michael Ford. Everybody who sees him knows he's had real estate. First thing they start off with is, let me tell you what we can do. We can do this. And after a while, it's like, how can I be opposite everybody else?
Mm-hmm.
I've always been that way. If the minute everybody goes left, I'm just going to go right. The minute everybody starts going right, I'm going left. My whole point is, how do I get to know you outside of what you do in your position? Because the reality of it is, like, we do work for FedEx. We've been doing work for FedEx now for almost 9 years. We're from New Jersey to Midwest down to Florida. We've been doing a ton of transactions with nothing sexy about it. A lot of warehouse stuff and stuff, but you won't read it in a paper deal. We just did a new FedEx deal.
Yeah.
But the point is, the guy who brought us in, Wiley Johnson, retired 3 years ago. I still call Wiley. I call to check on him, make sure it's, you know, his, he had a family member who passed. We went to the funeral. We sent stuff to him. Because my relationship is with Wiley. It's not with FedEx.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying?
Yep.
And if I can't tell you how many of these guys, Court Bishop, same thing with AT&T. He said, Dallas, you know, you're the only broker who still called.
Mm.
And that hit me like a ton of bricks, man. Because at that point, people are clearly just using you for your title.
Yeah.
And I don't know about anybody on this call, but who would just want to be used for your title?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a human being who, you know, I cry, I laugh. I'm a normal person. And if I think I got 1,000 friends because these are the brokers I've been helping, then the minute I'm retired, I'm gone, I don't hear from one of y'all.
Yeah, we weren't friends after all, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I really want to create the atmosphere that I would want to be a part of. You know, the scripture says treat people how to be treated, man. And for me, if you're very genuine about that, in my office building, I'll say this and I'll shut up. I check in with the security guards every day and ask them if they want coffee. We have a hell of a coffee machine. We have this Malay France coffee machine. It's a hell of a good car. You got to have a PhD to work the damn machine. They want to know what, if, you know, I ask them, they want, I will make their coffee and bring it back down to them. Hmm. Why do I do this? I do this every day simply because I've had those jobs where nobody paid attention to you before or act like you don't exist.
Yeah.
And I know what that feels like. And that's a horrible feeling. Mm-hmm. But people come in this building, I see it. The security guys, I don't speak to them or nothing. I'm going to always stop. I'm going to shake their hand. I'm going to say hello. One lady likes tea, lemon tea. I have lemon tea. I take that to her. Mm-hmm. Somebody else likes coffee. I take them coffee. Again, I want to make the world, present the world how I would want it to be. So the more we do that with one another, I think you'll find yourself a friend. You may find yourself a client. And you may just find yourself closer to God.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's an excellent way to kind of wrap up, because, again, it's all about the relationships, not the transaction. And I certainly wanted to make sure that we emphasize that point. I think you've done an exceptional job in that regard, helping us to appreciate that. Because, again, you know, so many people get in the industry. We're trying to talk to those ones that are really getting going in the industry. And, you know, it's not about just closing the deal. It's about building that relationship. And it will take you much further than just trying to get the one deal done and then move on and cash the check. So, you know, absolutely. certainly appreciate you bringing that up. What about the future of T. Dallas Smith and Company? I know, like you said, you're going toward development and some other things and investments. Where would you like to see the company in 5 to 10 years? Where do you think you guys will be at?
So we're 100 million. We'll be 100 million plus revenue. We'll be owning some property, but it's TDS Investments that will own the property. So sure. It's sort of two arms. You've got T. Dallas Smith and Company over here. Mm-hmm. TDS Investments over here. I told Egbert Perry, Young Woo, Allen, I said, they're all in their 60s. I'm the baby of the bunch. So I'm 60. Egbert's 67. Young Woo will be 71, I think, this year. I think Allen will be 68. So I'm the baby. And I tell them that all I want to do is the stuff that old rich folk do. I said, don't give me too much headache. Yeah. You know, one thing about buying an asset that's cash flowing is making sure you got a good crew to manage it and you having your meetings with that crew. I'm not, you know.
Right.
I'm not the one that's washing the windows, but it gives me a lot of my time back. You know, Lord willing, the creek don't rise. That's how I'm going to spend my time and create these vehicles over here that my brokers can also invest in. So it's beyond just doing the transactions, but being able to create a vehicle for them where they'll continue to get revenue. And so again, all I'm doing is trying to create these things that I wish existed when I was coming up.
Yeah.
And that's what I'll continue to do, man.
All right. Well, sounds good. Well, I really appreciate it. You know, we're going to shut it down there, but I certainly appreciate you hanging on a little bit longer as well. Again, I don't know what happened with our recording at the beginning, but, you know, you hang in there with us and we certainly appreciate it. And for everyone on the call, I want to thank you as well for being here. As you know, this is the Mornings with Joel CRE podcast. Please share this with anyone who you think could benefit from it. You know, TD had a wealth of good information to share with us today, and you're balanced in the process of, you know, where you don't have to be as humble as you are, but, you know, we appreciate you sharing the balance there and how you keep it all together.
Hey, man, let me just tell you, you better be humble. If you want to crash fast, let pride get in your way.
There you go.
That's a whole nother podcast on that.
Yeah. I think we're going to see a lot of that pretty soon, but we'll talk about that another time.
All right.
Yeah, so T, appreciate it, man. Thank you, everybody, right, for being here today. Again, the Mornings with Joel CRE podcast. We'll see you guys soon.
All right. Take care, brother.
All right, take care, everyone.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Mornings with Joel CRE podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to write a brief review. And as always, continue to invite, share, and subscribe.